now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrtz.
And welcome in. Thank you for joining us today. I am Lindsay Ehrtz here for our streaming show. We're glad you found us. Make sure you tell your friends, too. Wherever you stream, Apple TV or Amazon Fire, Roku, wherever you get us, and then on YouTube as well, you can find us there. Tell your friends that this is the best political show ever. Leah Murray, Adam Gardner. You're supposed to respond to that.
It is the best show.
Okay. Not just like
I'm going to take the converse of this.
I'm going to have the opposite opinion. Anyone who's
the one topic where no debate is allowed. we do have to cut
they
Nat
just
at the top,
at
folks.
Me blankly, like maybe I don't know.
We take our cues.
It's fine. Yeah. Whatever. We're glad you're here. All right, producer Peter's here too. Hi, Peter.
Hi, folks.
All right. Topics we're going to hit today: PBS and NPR now facing funding cuts. We're going to talk about the local impacts of that. Want to hit to another media issue that we saw this week, the cancellation of the Stephen Colbert show. That was pretty shocking.
Some great news in media this week.
Media is having a week, okay? We're having a week. Also, the state of Utah is evicting Chinese landowners and blocked some Chinese landowners here in the state. So we'll dive into what that means and how concerned we should be. And then we found this story interesting that President Trump is sort of threatening some NFL teams with their team names, wanting them to revert back to some old names. So we shall discuss
this guy.
Okay, so let's dive right in. Leah Murray, Adam Gardner, introduce yourselves. Tell us who you are.
I am a political science professor up at Weber State University, and I'm going to introduce Adam as one of my former students. So this is what happens to you when you get a political science degree later in life. You have to argue with your professor.
The stress of it just makes you lose all your hair.
That is right. I'm also director of the Walker Institute of Politics and Public Service up at Weber State.
And I'm a lobbyist in Salt Lake.
Not just.
You love my job.
A lobbyist. It's so great. Who are some of your clients so we know?
So I have a lot of really great clients. Utah Transit Authority. I get to work for West Jordan City. A couple of utility scale solar companies, energy companies, healthcare companies. It's a fun job. You get to cover the whole thing and not be an expert in anything.
Yeah.
It's great.
No, you get to be a subject matter expert on everything, right? Welcome to being a reporter, too. You kind of have to know everything, a little bit of everything.
And you got to be right.
I know. So and I have to be good at it.
You
tough.
Just have to be ish.
A lot tougher. I just got to be loud.
Yeah. Oh, loud.
My Twitter feed would tell me I'm not good at it. So there's that. Okay. Let's dive right in. This week, we saw Congress vote to halt some funding for public broadcasting, which could impact stations in Utah, PBS, NPR. Congress passed a cuts package that largely targeted foreign aid and USAID, but then had about $1 billion in cuts for the Public Broadcasting Corporation, which then gives grants to local stations like PBS Utah. Adam, let me start with you. How does this impact Utah?
Well, I mean, you have a couple of stations like up in Park City. You're going to have them lose about 15% of their budget, their local station. You're going to have a number of stations in the Valley lose 10 to 15% of their funding. Personally, as a conservative, I'm okay with all of this. I think it was a real issue. When I was a kid, I loved to watch Sesame Street, Wishbone, Ghost Riders, like I could name every
Reading
show.
Rainbow.
Reading Rainbow. Yeah. I watched all those shows as a kid. We had four or five channels. That was like our only option. Cable wasn't really a thing. It is now. We have YouTube, internet. Like we have so many options now that I think it's about time that we kind of let that go. I think the more egregious funding was NPR. I am so glad that we are not funding NPR anymore as taxpayers. And I wanted to read a couple of my favorite headlines from NPR, if I may, over the years.
Please.
Are you okay with that?
Go ahead.
Some white people may choose the yellow thumbs up emoji because it feels neutral, but some academics argue that opting out of a white emoji signals a lack of awareness about white privilege, akin to society associating whiteness with being raceless. How racism became a marketing tool for country music. Fat phobia and its racist past and present. I'm really glad that we refuse to cover the Hunter Biden story because it is just noise. It's fine. They can say all this stuff and I can think it's completely dumb, but taxpayers should not be footing any of the bill for this, especially when there's so much competition in the market.
Leah,
that's my two cents.
Yeah. Do you agree?
I think maybe I disagree. Okay. So I want to be clear. you're not wrong. The entry to media is much lower than it was back in the 1960s, where the argument would be Sesame Street wouldn't make a profit right out of the gate, so you kind of want to fund Sesame Street. And maybe today that's not true. I think one of the things I'm thinking about is, oh man, I'm worried about municipal coverage. I'm worried about local coverage. There's not a lot of profit. So let me just kind of say, sure, the same argument could be made that might have been made about Sesame Street 60, 50 years ago, could be made today about we're not really going to cover municipal elections because there's not a lot of profit in it. My concern about having all of our media be profit organizations, which we are sitting here at, so I want to be clear, right?
I can use some profits. Yeah, so if you want to advertise, come on over.
But I mean, like, that means that there are limited resources. You're answering to shareholders who need to make money, and maybe covering Ogden's city council or Ogden's mayor, and I'm from Ogden, is not as important as covering Salt Lake City's events. So a little bit, I do wonder, when you ask the question, how does it affect Utah, is how does it affect the ability to cover weekly city council meetings of the cities that we don't all hear about or know about in Utah, because maybe, right, like, that public funding made it possible for them to invest in a journalist to have that municipal beat, but that might not otherwise be profitable.
So you're saying the local control is, or the local control, the local reporting is really going to be impacted?
I think possibly. I mean, I think your point, maybe we don't know, right? Like, so it's possible that this opens up and then there's a market for all sorts of local coverage. But I am very concerned about the lack of local journalism. Right. I'm worried about who is covering the decisions that are made by Weber County about how they spend their money.
Well, there's already not enough of us.
Right. And there's only one of you, Lindsay. Right.
But I think it's a perfect opportunity that if you've lost 10% of your budget and you are a nonprofit and you want to get the word out and it is important. Luckily, there are some ways. I think the Tribune has proved a lot of this by turning themselves into a nonprofit. There are ways that you can get those that need to donate somewhere that can help out. And if there's nobody that will donate or nobody that will watch, maybe we salute them into a slow and painful death. I don't think that will be the case. So I think there's a lot of people that are going to want to donate and cover this.
But can I push you back?
No, you cannot.
I'm going to, because the answer is, it's not just about whether someone donates or whether someone watches. It's about whether there's a journalist in the room when a city council is making a decision.
100%
agree. Right. So a little bit, it's like, I want it to be something maybe that no one wants to watch,
yeah,
but those council people know that there's a journalist in the room, and maybe the only way that gets funded is through a public grant. That's, right,
yeah,
for me,
right,
the rub.
Adam, I want to push you a little bit and just ask, if the headlines that you read had gone the other way and they were more conservative-leaning or more right-focused or whatever, would you feel the same way about taxpayer dollars going to an organization like NPR?
Yes,
and you're
going to
say yes. I know you are.
If our taxpayer dollars funded Fox News or the National Review or Newsmax, I would be infuriated. So they should.
Yeah. So it's a full stop.
I also have the advantage of that not being the case, so I feel fine.
Vindicated. But it's easier to rail.
But I like
that.
I like to believe that, yes, that's, yeah, totally my stance.
Yeah, it's the principle of it. I want to just push a little bit, Leah, on how does this impact when we look at, okay, cuts to public broadcasting. Then we look at, which we're going to talk about in a minute, the Colbert decision this week to cancel Colbert. When we talk about the settlement with President Trump and 60 Minutes during the election with the Kamala interview, Trump suing the Wall Street Journal over an unflattering article. Is all of this having a chilling effect on media and the way media oversees administrations, or is it just bad timing,
yeah,
with all of these things?
Wow, that's a really good question. I mean, I think the answer on PBS, so I will just tease a little bit, like, Richard Nixon's calling and he wants his politics back, right? Because he was going to cancel NPR and PBS before I was born. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a really old conversation. So a little bit it's about timing. A little bit it's Donald Trump getting some things done that I think has been a Republican wish list for decades. But that doesn't mean it doesn't also have a chilling effect. So I don't think it has a chilling effect on reporters, because I think reporters are going to still do their job. My concern is Paramount, right, coming to a settlement, maybe because of other issues they've got going on in their corporation, because it is a profit business, and the power that a presidential administration can bring to bear in those conversations, the chilling effect is on who they pay to do the job, right? So I might not hire Scott Pelley if Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes is critical of their settling the lawsuit about how they covered Kamala Harris in that interview. I'm concerned about the chilling effect for the people who write the checks, not as much for the people who are doing the journalism.
Yeah, what do you think, Adam?
I think we have a couple of big problems here. During the Obama administration, I don't think there was a president who investigated, wiretapped, bugged more journalists than him, investigating over leaks. That is true. He went after reporters like crazy. In this administration, it's different because President Trump is going after their corporate overlords for the most part.
Right.
When Paramount and CBS are, you know, when they're trying to merge or to buy each other and they need approval from the DOJ, normally that is a decision that can be done with just professionals in the room and say, here's what we have to weigh, here's the law. That's not the case. And it wasn't the case under the Biden administration with a lot of those mergers. It's not the case now. So he's going to interject himself and his opinions. And that's a scary thing. 60 Minutes settling. I totally get why they settled for $16 million because who's going to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars fighting him when he has a $1 billion legal defense fund funded by his donors? That's scary. These law firms have all settled with him and they're providing free legal work. Some of the best law firms in the country. That is terrifying. The Colbert decision, it's really terrible that it happened now because it's very easy to lump it in the conspiracy. If what we're hearing is true, and I don't know these numbers for sure, the numbers we've seen float around are that show is losing $40 million a year. It has 100 people that work on it. Advertising over the last year has been cut in half. It can't sustain itself. And Colbert, I loved when he was on The Daily Show and had the Colbert Report. Mm-hmm. He was this fake conservative and was really funny. And he's not funny anymore. And that's okay. We don't have to watch it, whatever. But he's not funny. His show doesn't make money. We're canceling it.
Right. But let's just say this. That, I think, is true. I've heard the same numbers. It definitely was losing money. To a certain extent, I think Late Night is losing money. So it's not just Colbert.
He's the number one rated.
Right. But the answer, I think, is Paramount made this decision in the wake of the pressure from the Trump administration. So they are able to make what is probably a fiscally responsible decision, but at the same time go, here you go, President Trump.
It's a lot easier to make.
Yeah. Right. And I just, that right there still gives me pause, right? Yeah. I need, you know, a free and robust fourth estate that is part of checks and balances in this country, which is making sure that our elected officials are asked all the really hard questions all the time. And I'm just concerned about, like you said, the chilling effect, the ecosystem that our journalism finds itself in as a result of the timing of it, even if it's a due.
True.
Right. To a fiscal, it makes for a fiscal reason, excuse me, but it makes President Trump think, oh, I got you.
But
right. So now the Wall Street Journal, I'll get you too.
If they canceled like nightly news, national nightly news on NBC or ABC, I get that. But it's Colbert. No one's.
Do you think he was funny, Leah? Adam said he's not funny. Is he funny?
When your main guests are like Adam Schiff and Doug Emhoff and like, come on, like you are catering to one audience and that's totally fine. There's a market for that, but.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't watch it.
Okay.
So obviously I think if I thought it was funny, I probably would have invested the time to watch it. A little bit, I think, how do I say, you know, being on at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock on a broadcast, like that's not, we're streaming.
Yeah.
Because the world is going to streaming. What are we doing? What are we talking about?
My next question, what is the future of late night if this is being canceled for financial reasons, which you say it is? What is the future of these late night hosts, which we've had for decades?
You have like Jimmy Fallon, who's kind of figured it out. He's been able to do skits and things like the Johnny Carson's type stuff that everybody loved. You get to rewatch those on your own and it's kind of turned into like this social media platform. Colbert didn't have that. So I think the future of late night either doesn't exist or it exists in the zeitgeist of like a Daily Show, which is still very popular. It's rerun on social media all the time.
Right. It's clippable. It's streamable, which is where people are going.
And do you think it's a function of those late night hosts being political? Because to your point, you're saying Colbert turned off half of America because he was not funny with his left leaning jokes.
I don't like Trump. And it was just like merciless. I'm like, when are we going to have some comedy and levity. I watch you to get away from all this stuff. Jimmy Fallon, I think, is good at that. I don't think he's particularly funny either, but at least he recognizes that Republicans and Democrats are both watching his show, and I don't think he tries to go one way or the other.
Right. I mean, I think your point's well taken. A little bit Colbert was reflexively anti-Trump. And I would just say they're calling it, what's it called, an attention economy, right? So basically where we're going now is the next economy is an attention economy. And you cannot have one subject, right? It can't be I'm only ever complaining about this one subject in an attention economy where everyone's
exhausting.
Right. And so a little bit, that's a failure on the content of that team.
Okay. We'll have to see how it all shakes out. Okay. Let's move locally for a quick second. This past 2 weeks or so, we had Governor Cox and some state leaders come out and announce that Utah had divested Chinese owners had divested land in Utah, and the state had kind of forced them to do that. In the past couple of years, we passed some laws saying Chinese owners cannot own land, business owners, especially if you have ties to the Chinese government. Adam, let me start with you. How significant was this announcement from the state that we blocked a company tied to the Chinese military from owning land near the Provo Airport? And then forced Chinese owners to divest about 35,000 acres.
It's a huge deal. And I would ask anyone who doesn't think it is a big deal, would American companies that make military weapons for the United States government be allowed to go anywhere in China and build a factory or own land next to military sites or airports? It would be insane. Thank goodness Utah has stepped up. Representative Candace Perucci 2 years ago passed a bill to stop this. It was strengthened last year. We estimated there were probably around 30 to 36,000 acres of farmland and other land that was owned by Chinese citizens or companies or shell companies attached to China. It is illegal for a majority-owned 51% plus company in China, domiciled in China, to own any land in the United States. That is awesome. Once the state figures out that you have that land, they then will investigate you, send you a letter, and say you have to sell this land now. And if you don't, we are taking it over and selling it for you. That is a big deal in the state. And I'm really glad that Utah's like stepped up and led in that. And I'm really glad that Governor Cox made it, is making China part of his, I hope, part of his legacy, because it's a good one and it's a winner.
What's the fear, Leah? What is the fear if Chinese folks and militaries in particular own land here in Utah?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I understand if we're afraid of China, like that is the fear. And Adam and I have talked over the years quite a bit about China, so I know that we're worried about it. I guess my question, I'm so sorry to not answer your question,
no,
just ask my own, but like, you know, you are one of Bishop's, Representative Rob Bishop back in the day. Mm-hmm. I feel like he talked about federalism a lot. Can you talk to me about whether it's a state's prerogative to do this? Like, if China's doing this work across the country, wouldn't this be a better conversation nationally?
I would love if the feds did anything.
Okay.
They should be.
You just teed that up for the Republican over there.
They should be doing something. That is their job. That is their prerogative. They have failed massively.
Okay.
And behind closed doors, God, I'd even say in their open speeches, they will admit we have failed. We cannot come to an agreement on this. Please, states, do something. We want to see this happening in your state. And hopefully, look, what's happening right now is states do something. Someone gets sued. There's a lawsuit. Different different courts disagree, and it will go up to the Supreme Court. And that's how our laws are made now. That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Federalism is a big deal. And if the federal government isn't doing anything on it, it's the state's prerogative to defend its citizens and its bases. Absolutely.
And I heard Governor Cox say this, and I thought it was an important point, that he differentiated between the Chinese people and the Chinese government.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right? Which is an important distinction, because sometimes I think when we have these conversations, we fuel some of that fear over, you know, the Chinese people versus the government. So the concern here was that these were government-owned, military-owned companies, or at least with ties to the military.
Here's another big problem that I don't think a lot of people realize. It's not just military. China needs to be able to feed its people. And what is happening is the Chinese government now has to divest a lot of that land. So they're selling it to Chinese nationals. in Utah, in central Utah and other places, they are growing alfalfa at an industrial scale and food products, and they are sending it to China at half the price. And so they are cratering agriculture markets in the state of Utah.
Is that why Utah? Is that why they chose
That's
us?
A big reason why they would choose Utah. Mm. They are cratering our economies. They can grow alfalfa hay here.
But then how do you, based on what you just said, isn't there a slippery slope to, if it's a Chinese citizen who just bought, does that make, right? Like, we were just talking about the governor saying, let's make a distinction between the Chinese government and Chinese citizens. But if the Chinese government is divesting to Chinese citizens, then what's the next step?
Well, to Chinese citizens, that's the problem. There's a lot of Chinese citizens. There is a real thing called transnational repression, where Chinese citizens that are living in the United States are still being held accountable right. to Chinese law in the United States. And they enforce that law in the United States. And when they have family back home, they're going to do what their Chinese Communist Party overlords tell them to do. Mm. I know this sounds like a lot of George Orwell stuff, but it's real.
Yeah.
And it's happening all across the country. And so when you start cratering agricultural markets, and you now have farmers that can't afford to sell their grain and their alfalfa at good prices, and we start losing family farms in this state, we're in a whole heap of trouble.
Let's get to our final topic here before we have to wrap up. And that is this threat this week that President Trump made against a couple of NFL teams, or at least one NFL team and one baseball MLB team. Thank you.
The Washington Commanders and the Cleveland Guardians.
Thank you. Letters and professional sports weren't coming to my mind there. Okay, so he wants the Washington Commanders to revert back to their previous name. I don't know if I can say it. I'll just refrain from saying it because I don't know what the rules are anymore, so I'll just refrain from saying it. What do you make of this decision? I mean, this feels like the president is really taking aim at something that is curious to me. What do you guys think?
So a little bit, I think, oh my gosh, are we tripping over things we've already talked about? I don't understand why the Commanders is a problem. It's named after George Washington. So maybe speak to me about why President Trump doesn't want something named after George Washington. And a little bit, I don't know, they get the name Commanders. They finally get a quarterback that's fun to watch. They start winning. What are we talking about? I just really think this is a diversionary tactic from President Trump.
What is the motivation here?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about football and old arguments so that we're not talking about, you know, the Wall Street Journal article that's
tariffs,
breaking.
The economy.
Or
Epstein.
The economy. Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Leah's spot on. It's a diversionary tactic. When Obama was advocating for the name to be changed from the Redskins to something else, Washington football team, when he was advocating for it, Donald Trump was tweeting, the president has much bigger things to do. Don't tweet about a name change. And of course, he's now doing that. So it's nobody. We don't care what the president has to say on this. I think it's going to be a fandom NFL decision that's going to be made. If they revert back to the old name, I loved the team back then. I'll love it now. Niners are still better.
Now we're getting in sports fights.
Yeah, except my team are the New York Football Giants, and I can't.
Condolences.
Yeah, that's bad.
Maybe we should just end there. Yeah. You guys, thank you so much. Leah Murray, Adam Gardner, thank you guys for your insights today. We always appreciate it. We always appreciate you watching and joining us on this conversation. As always, you can watch us on ABC4, wherever you watch your local news. And Inside Utah Politics airs Sundays at 8 and 4. So we'd invite you to join us there as well. Producer Peter, I didn't talk too much today. I'm so sorry.
Oh, y'all were on a roll.
But I love you.
I mean, I'm just over here pressing buttons and I'm listening. And, I'm having a great time. You have at least one fan here.
I never even went to. That was on PBS.
You can watch that episode on YouTube if you want to see our interview with John Curtis.
Last week. So if you want to go watch
that,
just go.
And it was really good.
It was good, right?
I'm saying that like I was surprised. I'm not surprised. It was really good.
He's surprised because, again, Twitter feed tells me I'm not good at my job. So it's fine. All right, you guys, thanks for watching. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time.